Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Mantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jagiridas Maharaj ki, Venita Go Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with chapter 18 of Canto 9. And tonight we'll go from verses 17 to 29, continuing with the interesting description in this interesting chapter. Okay. So we're hearing about the pastime of Devayani. Using such unkind words, Samishta rebuked Devayani, the daughter of Shukracharya, in anger. She took away Devayani's garments and threw Devayani into a well. After throwing Devayani into the well, Samishta went home. Meanwhile, King Yayati, while engaged in a hunting excursion, went to the well to drink water and by chance saw Devayani. Seeing Devayani naked in the well, King Yayati immediately gave her his upper cloth. Being very kind to her, he caught her hand with his own and lifted her out. With words saturated with love and affection, Devayani said to King Yayati, "O great hero, O king, conqueror of the cities of your enemies, by accepting my hand you have accepted me as your married wife. Let me not be touched by others, for our relationship as husband and wife has been made possible by providence, not by any human being." Ajay Prabhu.
While taking Devayani out of the well, King Yayati must certainly have appreciated her youthful beauty, and therefore he might have asked her which caste she belonged to. Thus Devayani would have immediately replied, "We are already married because you have accepted my hand." Uniting the hands of the bride and the bridegroom is a system perpetually existing in all societies. Therefore, as soon as Yayati accepted Devayani's hand, they could be regarded as married. Because Devayani was enamored with the hero Yayati, she requested him not to change his mind and let another come to marry her.
So, any points here?
So when he wanted to make very sure that Yayati is really interested in marrying him.
Anything else?
Chastity of a woman. In that sense, even those rights. When she sees a male touching her body, then she thinks he would be her husband and no one else. So that kind of consciousness and chastity.
That's good. Anything else? What's going on, Rishi? Why do you have to distract the whole Srimad Bhagavatam class? Why don't you just sit?
She is just saying.
Well, then why don't you two sit somewhere separately so I can concentrate? This is Bhagavatam class, you don't carry on here. Huh? Otherwise, sit in different places. Okay? Behave yourselves. Okay. Any other points? So we're seeing here that this is the Vedic system. Vedic system means there is a great deal of emphasis about dealing with the opposite sex. In the modern world, things are melting away in terms of etiquette and social like structure. In other words, men and women can interact freely now. That is the system, and the education system, you know, the kids are just brought up in co-ed schools, whereas traditionally, the boys and girls were educated separately. You'd have Gurukul for the boy, and then the girls, they would go to, generally they would stay at home with the mother. But these days, you see, everything is co-ed. And then you see when people get older and they enter into society itself, then everything is very much based on
sex.
Yeah, sex, but just there's free interaction between the sexes. Whereas previously, this was not there. You couldn't just freely interact with someone. It wasn't that a woman could just walk up to a man on the street and a man could just walk up to a woman. It was considered uncultured in a traditional society. But these days, there's nothing abnormal about it at all. Hey, Rishi, you're going to have to calm down. I can't concentrate with you carrying on, so why don't you go and sit in the corner and do something? Because I don't want to see you constantly going like this, okay? So you just calm down, okay? And listen to the Bhagavatam or play your games or something, okay? So in the traditional system, it was very strict. But these days, practically anyone can associate with anyone and it's just considered to be normal. So in the ancient times, there were reasons why this was taking place. Because in the Bhagavatam it says the women are like fire and the men are like butter. And you know, if there's too much loose interaction, then the men become bewildered and they become distracted. And then they can't focus on what is the goal of life. Whereas in the modern times, then there's this free interacting. So we cannot bring the Vedic system into this modern world completely. It's not possible now. In ISKCON, it's something like that. We still have some segregation there, like the monads sit on one side, the men sit on the other side. This would not be there in other systems. You know, if you go to some other system, then they will, you know, men and women, they'll act freely. They'll just sit wherever they want. That's considered normal. At least we have some segregation is there. So there is some emphasis on these things. In other words, the Vedic system is meant to bring you out of the bodily concept of life. And you see, the modern system brings you more into the bodily concept of life. So now we're in the modern system, somewhat. You know, we can't stay in a system where men and women are completely separate anymore. That won't take place anymore. Even Harikesh Prabhu, he was cooking for Prabhupada. He was one of Prabhupada's servants. And he was cooking. And he was in the kitchen cooking Prabhupada's lunch. And then some Mataji's, they come in to do some other cooking for the deities or whatever it is. So then he was a brahmachari. So he became upset because the Mataji's came into the kitchen while he was cooking Prabhupada's lunch. So he became upset. So afterwards, he complained to Prabhupada. He said, I'm trying to cook your lunch. I'm trying to concentrate on my service to you, and the Mataji's come in. And then Prabhupada said, okay, then go to the forest. He said, go and live in the forest. Then you can avoid the women. So it is not practical. You cannot avoid the opposite sex, you know, in our temples and like that. You know, the only way you can do it to some degree, you can become brahmachari or brahmacharini. And as long as you stay in the ashram, then you have isolation from the opposite sex. But then as soon as you come into the temple itself, into the temple area, there's women around, there's men around. So you cannot avoid these things. So we have to become, through Krishna consciousness, through self-realization, through absorption in our consciousness on Krishna, we have to become aloof from these things. So even though you'll be amongst the opposite sex, you won't be disturbed by them. So then, one time Srila Prabhupada, he was giving a radio interview, and the reporter said, are you self-realized? And Prabhupada said, yes. And then they said, what is the proof? Prabhupada said, I can be in the room full of naked women, I am not disturbed, but you cannot. So Srila Prabhupada was on another level of consciousness. Actually, if we want to overcome our anattas and material desires, we have to become Krishna conscious, self-realized. Then you won't be disturbed. You can be with the opposite sex or not with them, it doesn't matter to you. So that's the system. But Prabhupada taught us there has to be some segregation there. Because the way the world is these days, you know, but there has to be some respect in the dealings between the men and the women. Not that, you know, the men and the women can't be in the same area or the same place, but there has to be respect there. And the etiquette or the way we behave with each other has to be proper. Just like Prabhupada was teaching the Matajis how to cook, 1960s, the very early days of ISKCON. Right? And he's teaching all the girls how to cook. So while Prabhupada was teaching, he was teaching Janaki. She was one of the very early devotees in ISKCON. Her sister was Jamuna, who is one of the famous devotees. She sings the Govindam prayers every morning. She's a very famous devotee. So Janaki, and Janaki was married to Mukunda Maharaj. Right? But he was not Mukunda Maharaj, he was Mukunda Das. So she was married to him. So Prabhupada was teaching Janaki and the other Matajis how to cook. So it's just Prabhupada and the Matajis in the kitchen, you know, some of his disciples. So he was teaching them. And then Janaki was in there with Prabhupada. And then Mukunda Maharaj, at the time Mukunda, he came to the kitchen to speak to his wife. And Prabhupada looked and Prabhupada said, "You must go away." He said, "Because they are cooking for Krishna. And then you come and you have some male-female discussion," he said, "then you will contaminate the offering." So then he said, "Go away. You can talk to her after she is cooking. But while she's cooking, she must meditate on Krishna." So Prabhupada was teaching us these practical things. Even in the early days of the movement, when Prabhupada started ISKCON, Prabhupada had to teach his first female disciples how to put on a sari. Because they did not know how to put on sari. There was no one to teach. So Prabhupada had to teach. He showed them how to put on a sari. But then later in ISKCON, because Prabhupada had to Prabhupada said, when it's an emergency, then you have to do
everything.
Yeah, extraordinary things. But later, in 1974, 75, near the end, 76, near the end of his pastime, Prabhupada actually said, he said, "Do not let the women cook for me." Earlier on, all of Prabhupada's cooks were women, much of the time. But in the end, he said, no, they should not cook. Because he was showing like a sannyasi role. You know, in the beginning, he was very liberal because he was trying to engage her. But in the end, he showed, "I'm a sannyasi, then the women should not even cook for me." That's how strict Prabhupada said. But then my spiritual master, he was telling that story, and then he said to his female disciples, he said, "But you can cook for me." That is it. Prabhupada was showing some, at different times Prabhupada would show certain examples. But Prabhupada was showing us that we have to be very careful about our dealings with the opposite sex. So it is saying here that in the Vedic time, if you just touch the hand of the woman, you have to marry her. That's it, Vedic system. So now you think in your life, who was the first boy or the first girl who touched your hand? You should still be with that person. Huh?
Husband.
Is it? Okay, one Vedic role model. That's good. That's good. At least something is still there in Kali Yuga. One person. But, you know, if I thought, you know, the first time I touched a girl's hand, it's probably some girl I met in grade 4 or something. You know, probably held hands or something, and that's it. And I have to marry her for the rest of my life. I have to find her on Facebook and say, so we have to get married now. And then we grow up and we have boyfriend, girlfriend, and then we touch their hand like that. But that wasn't the system. Previously, that was not the system. So things have changed. We cannot bring this Vedic system right now and make everything like that. It's not possible. But at least in ISKCON, we should have something there. There should be some standards according to what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So it means what it basically means, we have to be very careful the way we deal with the opposite sex. When you're dealing with the Matajis or the Matajis deal with the Prabhus, you have to be very respectful. Not whimsical. Not everything becomes whimsical. You know, if you want to be whimsical, then get married. And between husband and wife, you can make jokes. No problem. And then half the time, that turns into fights anyway. So then you can't really enjoy anyone. And then you think, "I will become a sannyasi." And that's not possible either. So then you go back to your wife and you say, "Please. Please accept me." I will take sannyas. I don't need you anymore. And then you go, and then you come back and say, can you please cook me dinner? The Vedic system. So it means that, basically it means we have to be very, that's what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. Just be respectful when you deal with the opposite sex. So there's no disturbance. Because it says that if you don't follow the Vedic standards, it creates a disturbance. And you see in ISKCON, you know, devotees, we have to follow a good standard. Otherwise it disturbs everyone. You know, if some Mataji is not acting properly or some Prabhu is not acting, then it causes disturbance. Everyone gets disturbed. So everyone has to act properly. And then everyone is peaceful. That's easy. So, any points? Okay. Because of falling in the well, I met you. Indeed, this has been arranged by Providence. After I cursed Kacha, the son of the learned scholar Brihaspati, he cursed me by saying that I would not have a Brahmana for a husband. Therefore, O mighty armed one, there is no possibility of my becoming the wife of a Brahmana. Would have a wonderful.
Kacha, the son of the learned celestial priest Brihaspati, had been a student of Sukracharya, from whom he had learned the art of reviving a man who has died untimely. This art, called Mrtya Sanjeevani, was specially used during wartime, when there was a war, soldiers would certainly die untimely. But if a soldier's body was intact, he could be brought to life again by this art of Mrtya Sanjeevani. This art was known to Sukracharya and many others, and Kacha, a son of Brihaspati, became Sukracharya's student to learn it. Devayani desired to have Kacha as her husband. But Kacha, out of regard for Sukracharya, looked upon the guru's daughter as a respectable superior and therefore refused to marry her. Devayani angrily cursed Kacha by saying that although he had learned the art of Mrtya Sanjeevani from her father, it would be useless. At first, in this way, Kacha retaliated by cursing Devayani, never to have a husband who was a Brahmana. Because Devayani liked Yajati, who was a Kshatriya, she requested him to accept her as his bona fide wife. Although this would be Pratiloma Vivaha, a marriage between the daughter of a high family and the son of a lower family, she explained that this arrangement was made by Providence.
Any points? What are the points here?
When you see Guru Patni or Guru's daughter, or there are different seven matas have been called out. So in that way, as in Guru mother, Guru's wife is to be considered as a mother. So here he has a respect, if not mother. He has a respect in the Vedic times, the way how opposite sex are being dealt. So here that is being displayed. That's one point.
Anything else?
And the art or the skill that that has been learned by Kacha from Sukracharya will be useless if, because of some gurus, because of his offense to guru or something. No? That is something that is a comment or a question probably. How is that happening? Because he was true to his guru from the start.
Sure.
Kacha was to Sukracharya. So how he is losing his power, like Karna is losing his skill from...
No, he's cursed by the girl, that's why. The daughter of the Brahmana that she is cursing. Means if someone curses you, it's very powerful. If they have potency. It's like sometimes, you know, someone will say, I will curse you. But the person doesn't have any portals, so it doesn't matter. So you go ahead, curse me then. Doesn't matter. Do whatever you want. But if someone has potency, if they curse you, then that's powerful. But if someone has potency, if they bless you, it has potency, it has power. So if someone blesses or curses, they have to have the tejas. Tejas means like the potency. Like Jaipataka Swami. Like if he gives some blessing, then okay, then blessing is there. Or some, you know, any of the great personalities. But if some other person, you see these days, you know, they say they're Brahmanas in India. You know, they have a thread and they do, and they say, I will curse you, and they're getting, what's it going to do? It's not going to do anything. If a person has no shakti, no potency, he can't do anything. But this girl, she is the daughter of Shukracharya. She's very powerful. So when she cursed Kachyap, who's the son of Brihaspati, then there is some potency there. So they curse each other like this. In the material world means everyone's cursing each other. Everyone's always fighting and carrying on. So this is in the Bhagavatam. Even if you go back thousands of years, still people are doing like this. You know, people always in the material world, everyone is envious, and when you're envious, you always try to have you always have arguments with others, and you always curse the others. So, Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport, this is one of the Vedic arts. The Vedic art is that we can cure the person, make the person live a very long time. This is not there now in the modern system. These days, there's a different medical science. But in the old days, there was an Ayurveda. And part of the Ayurveda was that they could bring you back to life, or they could cure your wounds or heal your diseases just by mantras and herbs and all these things. Like Mahatma Prabhu, he knows all these things. He can cure you just by his mantra, by his herbs. He knows other things. But these days he gives you some antibiotic. So the system is finished. These days the doctors just give you some antibiotic. You know, you go to the doctor for anything, they give you the same antibiotic. Doesn't matter what disease you have, same tablet. Just give you. Or you study for 6 years in medical school and they just go to aisle 6 in Coles and get some Panadol. Yeah, same thing. Practically, it doesn't matter what you've got. So the system is gone. But previously, the Vedic science was much more subtle. So they were so powerful. They just chant one mantra, and they put some herb, and then they can cure the wound, even overnight. It says on the battlefield of Kurukshetra 5,000 years ago, and Bhishma, when they came back, everyone had wounds. Then he would rub some herb, chant some mantra, in the morning they'd wake up, and the wound is healed, and they have full strength. So this is there in the Vedic science, and these are very subtle arts, because in the Vedic science everything is based upon mantra. You chant some mantra by sound vibration, then things change. You can change the elements. Even in the battle of Kurukshetra, you know, like Bhishma and someone, they could chant mantras, they could make the clouds go away in the sky, and then someone else chant the mantras and all the clouds come back. You know, so by sound, by mantra, they can change the elements even. They can heal the bodies. They can cure things. They can create aeroplanes called Pushpa Vimana. The aeroplane made of flowers. But by mantra, they chant, and then the plane goes like this and it can fly. So all this is happening by sound vibration. So the Vedic system is based upon sound vibration, based upon mantra. Mantra is extremely powerful, and that is the entire Vedic system. Mantra or sound changes our consciousness. And in Kali Yuga, our consciousness becomes changed by mantra. Chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Everyone has memorized it. Very good. So you chant this mantra and it purifies, it changes your consciousness. So everything is changed. So the Vedic system is based upon mantra. Mantra means transcendental sound vibration. Changes your consciousness, your mind. So this is the system. So previously they did like this. These days, they just give you some Panadol or something and try to do the same thing. But previously they would chant mantra and then they could cure you all the diseases. So Prabhupada also points out that there is a pratiloma marriage going on. So pratiloma, we heard about this previously. What is the pratiloma marriage?
Unfavorable.
And what is the other one?
Anuloma.
Yeah. And what is that one?
Favorable.
Favorable, yeah. Why is it favorable? What makes a pratiloma?
Pratiloma is one where the girl is of the upper class, of, and anuloma is, it's okay even if it is lower or same.
Yeah, yeah. So it means the man, he has to be the same class or higher than the woman, the wife. So if the wife is higher, she's brahmana, he's kshatriya, it's pratiloma. It's not auspicious because she is more qualified and that will cause problems. Because the man always has to think he's better. So the wife, how do you keep the husband happy? You have to make him think he's better. That's the secret. That's the secret. Even though you may know he's not better, but you have to make him think he's better. That's the Vedic system. Because then the man feels satisfied. I am superior. Because the man has to feel superior. So if the wife is intelligent, right, she will make him feel he is more superior. Even though she might be superior, but she has to make him feel he's superior. And these days, what happens? The women will not do that. They think, no, I will not make the man feel superior. And then they have so many problems in the marriage. But if the woman is intelligent, she makes him feel superior. Even though she might be superior, she might be much more intelligent than him. But she makes him feel like that. And then everything becomes harmonious. So that is the system. That is the baby. System. So that is pratiloma. Pratiloma means the wife is superior, the husband is inferior, it's not considered auspicious. So in this situation, in this pastime, it actually takes place. They accept each other. Now, Prabhupada explains the third point he makes in the purport is that why do they both accept this pratiloma marriage when normally they would not? Is because they understood it is destiny. Because sometimes destiny is very powerful. And they understand. She explains to him, I have been cursed that I have to marry someone like this. And then he sees that she is very qualified. And when he hears her say that, then he understands, okay, maybe there's some destiny here. And he says, I do not like to break dharma. But in your case, then I will make some exception. So some destiny is coming. So basically, we have to understand, we realize in our lives, our destiny is very powerful. Even though you might want to do something, and you can try for many years to do something, but if it's not destined to happen, it does not take place. So what is the best way to understand where we should put our energy or what we should do in our life? Because sometimes you spend all your energy trying to do something and it doesn't happen. So how do we avoid making these mistakes?
Become Krishna conscious.
Become a Krishna conscious, keep a Krishna understanding, yeah, it's true. But how else? On a practical level.
Take guidance.
Very good, yeah. You have to take guidance. You need gurus. Diksha gurus, shiksha gurus. You need senior people who can guide you. Otherwise you'll spend so much time putting in energy to attain something and maybe it's not destined to happen. So the senior devotee can say to you, yeah, stop wasting your time. There's like one devotee, he was telling me just before I was talking to him, and he was saying, he said to his guru, I want to join the army reserve. You know, in Australia they have army reserve, not the army, but like the army reserve, like on the weekends you go and kind of do army things like that. So he said, I want to do that because then I can learn some discipline. And then when I, in ISKCON, I can also use that the discipline I use and the leadership qualities to train others. But the guru said, no, don't waste your time. He said, ISKCON is not like the army anyway. So even if you learn all these things, but the devotees don't act like that. Sometimes it's hard to get the devotees to be disciplined. So he could have wasted so much time in doing something, but the guru said, no, the guru gave guidance. So I remember one time my spiritual master, Tamokrish Maharaj, he said, I don't trust any one person's mind, including my own. He said, I always consult. Before I make any big decision, I always consult. So devotee, we should always do like that. Before we make any big decision, then we go to our gurus, senior Vaishnavas, our Diksha Guru, and then we get their advice, their blessings. So here we see that destiny is controlling something. You have to be very sure. Otherwise you make the wrong choices, your life becomes completely disturbed. So any points?
So, in this case, how do Devayani understand basically it is their destiny, because it is nothing comes by chance and this is not a chance, which means they have understood that as a destiny. How, without a guidance, or do we say that they are so powerful that they think all the past and they know what it is, that they have understood that it is our destiny to? Or it is just the Vedic system that, okay, you hold my hand, therefore you are my husband, something like that.
How do they know?
Yeah, how do they know that it is their destiny? I mean, we don't know anything.
It's very high, yeah. I mean, these are highly qualified people. Highly qualified. I mean, she's the daughter of Shukracharya. Yeah, he's in charge of a whole dynasty. And very qualified people. But even still, you should take guidance. So you have first class disciple, second class disciple, third class disciple. First class disciple knows what the guru wants. Even without the guru saying, he knows what the guru wants. Second class disciple has to ask. Third class disciple asks and he does the wrong thing anyway. So we have to be like first class. We should just not, you know, we should be mature as devotees. We don't have to ask the guru all the time. We should know what we know what to do. Every day we know what to do. You know, myself, when something big comes, like some big thing, then I go to my guru. I say, you know, Burujan Prabhu or one of the seniors, I say, you know, what should I do? What do you think? Give me your guidance, give me your advice. But, you know, I don't send email every day, you know. Do you think I should give class tonight? You know, don't waste time. You should know what to do. Any other point? Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, because such a marriage is not sanctioned by regular scriptures, King Yayati did not like it. But because it was arranged by providence, and because he was attracted by Devayani's beauty, he accepted her request.
According to the Vedic system, the parents would consider the horoscopes of the boy and girl who were to be married. If according to astrological calculations, the boy and girl were compatible in every respect, the match was called Yotakha and the marriage would be accepted. If 50 years ago, even 50 years ago, this system was currently in Hindu society, regardless of the affluence of the boy or the personal beauty of the girl, without this astrological compatibility, the marriage would not take place. A person is born in one of three categories known as Devagana, Manushyagana and Rakshasagana. In different parts of the universe, there are demigods and demons, and in human society, also some people resemble demigods, whereas others resemble demons. If according to astrological calculations, there was conflict between a godly and a demonic nature, the marriage would not take place. Similarly, there were calculations of Pratiloma and Anuloma. The central idea is that if the boy and girl were on an equal level, the marriage would be happy. Whereas inequality would lead to unhappiness. Because care is no longer taken in marriage, we now find many divorces. Indeed, divorce has now become a common affair. Although formally one's marriage would continue lifelong, and the affection between husband and wife was so great that the wife would voluntarily die when her husband died, or would remain a faithful widow throughout her entire life. Now, of course, this is no longer possible for human society as all has fallen to the level of animal society. Marriage now takes place simply by agreement. Dampatye bhir kuchir ye to hu
abhiruchi.
Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.3. The word abhiruchi hi means agreement. The boy and girl simply agree to marry, the marriage takes place. But when the Vedic system is not rigidly observed, marriage frequently ends in divorce.
So what are the points? Astrology is there, so Prabhupada is authorizing astrology. Okay, one thing is very important though, you have to make sure the astrologer is a devotee. Very important. Don't go to the non-devotee astrologers. Because when a devotee reads your chart, they read it different to the non-devotees. Because one thing you'll see in the devotees' charts, there's always some what would appear to be inauspicious thing. Now, if you look at my chart, like my moon is in the 8th house. 8th house is the most inauspicious house. And the Jupiter and Mercury are in the 12th house, which is also inauspicious. But that's good for a devotee, because that devotee means you become detached from the material world. But if a material astrologer reads that, the material astrologers say, oh, this is not good, and this is, you know, detrimental things. But a devotee astrologer reads, oh, this is good. Because you become detached from this world. You'll develop more renunciation in this lifetime. So you need a devotee astrologer. That's the important thing. Astrology, Prabhupada is saying astrology is authorized, but the astrologer must be a Vaishnava. If they're not, then that's not so applicable. Just like I was in India one time, I went to one astrologer, and I just had some spare time. I was stuck somewhere. You know, I had to go somewhere and I couldn't get there, so I had to wait. And there was one astrologer there. This astrologer. I said, okay, so we went in, gave him some money, read it. But he just said all material things. He said, oh, you'll get two cars and you'll have a house and like that. Yeah. That's all he said. He always said, yeah. It's all true, it all came true. It's like, who cares? He didn't tell me anything spiritual. But a devotee astrologer, he will read it and he'll say, oh, yeah, but this means you will become more renounced, more detached, like this. Like my astrology, he's a devotee. I consult him by name. Sometimes, not very often, but sometimes by name something. So he had a look at something in my chart, and he said, you will spend more time with your family, but you'll become more detached from them. And it's actually true, I've noticed it's happening. I'm spending more time with them because they're living close to me now. But in one sense, I just think it's quite boring. You know, spend time with your family, just like, it's like, you know, what are we doing? Unless Krishna consciousness is there in the center, it becomes quite mundane. You know, they talk about the same old things all the time. Remember when you were a kid? Yeah, Mum, I remember when I was a kid. Remember you did that? Yes, I remember I did that. It's quite boring. It's monotonous. So for a devotee, we're not so interested in these things. So Prabhupada is saying astrology is there, but it must be from a devotee astrologer. Now, Prabhupada, what is he pointing out in the purport? What's the most important thing in the marriage? When we're seeing if two people are to be married, the most important thing must be there is compatibility. If they're not compatible, it doesn't work. So the system is, in the old days, in the Vedic system, you didn't even meet the husband. You never even met the person. Just on the marriage day, you know, they pull the... You know, imagine these days if that happened. You know, imagine how nervous you would be. You know? That's why you see the marriages in India. You know, and you see them, they're like so, like... I've seen in Vrindavan, like, they're sort of like, no, I don't know, maybe they just found the person like the day before or something. Because the ancient system was, until that moment, until the curtain went, You didn't actually see the person or know the person. But these days we do it differently, but in ISKCON, certain gurus in ISKCON, they have the system that there has to be a courting period. 6 months, 1 year, even some gurus say 2 years before they'll let the disciples get married. So you get to know each other properly. Because you have to make sure you are compatible. Because if you're not compatible, then it doesn't work. Yeah? It's very important that the marriage must be quite peaceful. Yeah? It's important that the husband and wife get along nicely. So there'll be compatibility. So that you can advance nicely in your Christian consciousness. Otherwise, you waste so much time just arguing and your mind's disturbed and it's hard to chant. So it's good. I mean, there's always going to be some disturbance because, you know, husband-wife relationship means there must be something there. But you want to have a good, compatible relationship. So Prabhupada says you need to check the astrology. And actually, the most important thing, you need to get the blessings of the senior devotees, the ones who know you. You know, devotees who know, they say, oh, yeah, this is a good match. They'll say, yeah, this boy, this girl, this is good. And when all the devotees... Just like when I asked Atulia to marry me, and then I came and I asked all the devotees, and everyone said, it is a good match. Yeah? No one told me, oh no, this is not good. Everyone, every devotee. When I told them, I said, yeah, this is good. I know you, yeah, this is good match. And when all the devotees blessed like that, not from some false blessing, you know, because you can go to the devotee and say, oh, I'm going to marry this person. I say, yeah, I bless you, like that. But they don't actually know them. So where's the blessing? But when they know them, they know this boy, know them, and when they think about it, they think practically, yeah, this is good. And say, yeah, this is good, bless, go ahead, do this. And when everyone says that, and you get blessings in the boat, then you know it'll be successful. The most important thing in the marriage is make sure the devotees are blessing. Then it is auspicious. Any points?
Well, you said that nowadays that time frame is good, but is it that checking horoscopes and times more individually, wouldn't that be enough? Or
these days? Yeah, well, like I said, they check the astrology, but is it a devotee who checks it, or is it just some person they get in India to check it? You need a devotee to check it. Not just any astrologer, you need a devotee. The devotee needs the Lord. The devotee will have the knowledge. And if the parents arrange, okay, that's good, but you want to, if your parents are devotees, it's good. If your parents are not devotees, then it's good if you have some ISKCON influence. It's difficult in India because India has so many pressures coming. In the West, it's different. Like, I can just come home to my mother, I say, I'm going to marry someone. She says, you know, it's not as much pressure there. You know, she meets the person, she likes the person, okay, you can do it. But in India, there's so many, you know, yeah, social pressures and, you know, so many people you have to keep happy and...
Relatives.
You know, yeah, the relatives have to, you know, and then this one and that one and in the village and, then, you know, the whole country and then the president of India. Yeah, the goat that lives around the corner and it's like... Yeah, it's more complicated in India. Which is good, but it's also these days because it's mundane. The Vedic system is good because India is still following something in the Vedic system. But because there is not devotion in the system anymore, it's not based on bhakti, then it becomes sentimental. So they want to follow all these things, but it's not all leading to Krishna. That's the prayer. Samsidya Haritoshanam. The whole purpose of getting married is to please Krishna. These days they don't think like that. They just think, oh, this boy, that girl. No. This boy, that girl, why? So that they can reach Krishna together. That's the point. So that's why devotees have to be involved as much as possible. In India, it's hard because parents...
Look, this one question is that we have seen that many times the husband is a devotee and wife is not, and eventually she becomes a devotee. But there are some cases where the lady is a devotee, but then the parents apparently insist on. You know, you've seen so many examples, but it's difficult. So how do we put that point? Because they will say that no, they've seen so many things gone. They've got, but we make them tell them that it's different. You know what I mean?
It's just very hard. It's very difficult these days because everyone has different ideas. The parents are not devotees, they have different ideas. It's very difficult. So each individual case, you just have to look at each individual case differently. So, at least for our case, we should try to do everything as nicely as possible. It's working okay for you, so.
Yeah.
So just keep going. Any other point? Okay. Thereafter, when the learned king returned to his palace, Devayani returned home crying and told her father, Shukracharya, about all that had happened because of Sarmishta. She told how she had been thrown into the well but was saved by the king. As Shukracharya listened to what had happened to Devayani, his mind was very much aggrieved. Condemning the profession of priesthood and praising the profession of Unshavritti, collecting grains from the fields, he left home with his daughter. Yogesh,
you like to read? When a Brahmana adopts the profession of a kapodak or pigeon, he lives by collecting grains from the field. This is called Unshavritti. A Brahmana who takes to this Unshavritti profession is called first class, because he depends completely on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and does not beg from anyone. Although the profession of begging is allowed for a Brahmana or Sannyasi, one does better if he can avoid such a profession and completely depend on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to make sense. Shukracharya was certainly very sorry that because of his daughter's complaint, he had to go to his disciple to beg some mercy, which he was obliged to do because he had accepted the profession of priesthood. In his heart, Shukracharya did not like his profession, but since he accepted it, he was obliged to go unwillingly to his disciple to settle the grievance submitted by his daughter.
So what are the points in this purport? Yeah, we're seeing the Bhagavatam gives us two types of examples. It gives us the best example and it gives us the
worst.
Yeah, the worst or the wrong example. Like that. Like you see in the fourth canto in the Daksha Yajna, then you'll see, you know, these are great personalities, Daksha, right? There are so many sages there. They're very powerful people. They all became under the influence of false ego. Just like you see in the last couple of chapters, it's mentioned Vishwamitra and Vashishta, right? And then influenced by false ego. So then they still, the Bhagavatam teaches us, okay, these are the best examples. Just like you'll see in the Daksha Yajna, you see the example of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva shows us the best example of how devotees should behave. And then you see the worst example of Daksha, who becomes covered with pride and he curses, even curses Lord Shiva and offends Lord Shiva. So there are so many examples in the Bhagavatam of what we should do, but there are many examples of what we should not do. So we should learn from both. Because the principle that we're meant to, that governs everything that we learn in the Bhagavatam, is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So how do we learn to remember Krishna? By following the positive examples. How do we learn not to forget Krishna? By avoiding the negative examples which we're seeing here in the Bhagavatam. So sometimes you'll see some negative things. So they're teaching us this is what we should not do. So we see here, how should a Brahmana live? A Brahmana should live with simplicity. He's very simple. And a Brahmana should live on charity. Because when a Brahmana lives on charity instead of a wage, he cannot be controlled. As soon as you give someone a wage, you control the person. Right? You pay them, right? They have to do what you say. especially these days, because if you don't do what you say, you lose your job. So you have to, and it's not easy to get jobs these days. So therefore, you're kind of like you're trapped. And even sometimes you have to act in a way you don't want to act, or the person treats you in a way you don't want to be treated, but you can't do anything about it. Because, so that is the sense. So a Brahmana never gets into that situation. He lives on charity, not by some wage. He goes, people give him charity, and he lives very simply, he doesn't need a lot, and therefore he can't be controlled. And then therefore Prabhupada said he can say what needs to be said. Because when you pay someone, you control them, they can't speak. Yeah, they can't say the truth, what needs to be said. But a Brahmana, he must always speak the truth. So a Brahmana, he does not accept a wage, only charity. And then he will speak what needs to be said. And then he has potency. Otherwise, he loses his potency. If a Brahmana accepts a wage, his potency becomes lost. He has to be detached. And then he develops tejas. And ultimately, Prabhupada points out, he depends on Krishna. That's a Brahmana's life. Brahmana means he depends on Krishna. Okay, I don't have so much money, but Krishna will look after me. And that's how Prabhupada was. Prabhupada, okay, we don't have much, but Krishna will look after us. Right? And then he just depended on Krishna, and Krishna gave him so much facility. Just like with Radha Rasa Bihari in Juhu, and Prabhupada put the deities there, they were just in a shed, and Prabhupada said, please, he said to the deities, please accept this inconvenience, and I promise you, I will build you a beautiful temple. And then Prabhupada fulfilled his promise to the deities. So a devotee lives very soon. He surrenders to Krishna, depends on Krishna, and Krishna gives him all this. King Vrishabhava understood that Shukracharya was coming to chastise or curse him. Consequently, before Shukracharya came to his house, Vrishabhava went out and fell down in the street at the feet of his guru and satisfied him, checking his wrath. The powerful Shukracharya was angry for a few moments, but upon being satisfied, he said to Vrishabhava, my dear king, kindly fulfill the desire of Devayani, for she is my daughter, and in this world I cannot give her up or neglect her. So in the purport, Prabhupada is teaching us that a devotee is daksha. Daksha means expert. A devotee has to be expert. A devotee has to understand how to please everyone. So sometimes there is conflict in our life between our spiritual responsibility and our material responsibility. So a devotee has to be daksha. You have to keep everyone happy, which is impossible, but you have to try your best. So my policy for my family, my material family, my mother, like that, my family, then my policy is just give them enough to keep them all happy. Because sometimes they say, oh, we need you to do this, or we want you to do this, or you have to come and see us at this time. So give them enough that they're all happy and peaceful, and then that's enough, and then go and serve Krishna. So a devotee has to be daksha. You have to keep everyone satisfied, which is not easy in the material world, because everyone wants something. It's hard to keep everyone satisfied, but you have to be expert. Rupa Goswami says, do not neglect your material responsibilities. Fulfill them, but don't let them overcome your bhakti either. Just do enough to keep everyone satisfied. After hearing Shukracharya's request, Vrishabhava agreed to fulfill Devayani's desire, and he awaited her words. Devayani then expressed her desire as follows: Whenever I marry by the order of my father, my friend Samishta must go with me as my maidservant along with her friends. Vrishabhava wisely thought that Shukracharya's displeasure would bring danger, and that his pleasure would bring material gain. Therefore, he carried out Shukracharya's order and served him like a slave. He gave his daughter Samishta to Devayani, and Samishta served Devayani like a slave, along with thousands of other women. So, Mahaprabhu.
in the beginning of these affairs concerning Sadhustad Devyani, we saw that Sadhustad had many friends. Now these friends became maid servants of Devyani. When a girl married a Kshatriya king, it was customary for all her girlfriends to go with her to her husband's house. For instance, when Vasudev married Devaki, the mother of Krishna, he married all six of her sisters, and she also had many friends who accompanied her. A king would maintain not only his wife, but also the many friends and maidservants of his wife. Some of these maidservants would become pregnant and give birth to children. Such children were accepted as Dasi Putra, the sons of maidservants, and the king would maintain them. The female population was always greater than the male. But since a woman needs to be protected by a man, the king would maintain many girls who acted either as friends or as maidservants of the queen. In the history of Krishna's household life, we find that Krishna married Sushitamana's 8 wives. These were not maidservants but direct queens, and Krishna expanded himself into 16,108 forms to maintain different establishments for each and every wife. This is not possible for ordinary men. Therefore, although the kings had to maintain many, many servants and wives, not all of them had different establishments.
So what are the points?
Women protection. Women protection. Women has to be protected and they cannot be left alone, basically. The Vedic systems, they were protected if parents until a certain age. And since there is a discrepancy in the figures, so not every woman will be protected as such, and it's the duty of the king to maintain. Therefore, women needs to be protected, so he takes up or maintains them.
Anything else?
But now it's opposite, like men population is more than women.
Is it?
Yeah.
How do you know?
Yeah, because aborting lot of daughters in India, so the stat shows that boys are more in number.
Is it?
A big difference.
Yes,
probably. Yeah.
In India,
boys
in
boys. But they are aborting their girls.
That's bad.
Yeah, the whole world. There's a lot of Ugra karma at this point in time. A lot of horrible, horrible, horrible things are taking place. But traditionally it was like that. Traditionally there's more girls than boys, traditionally. So we see here the potency of the Kshatriya. The Kshatriya, he had to look after many women, because that was the system. And even when Prabhupada first came to America in 1966, 65 then 66. Prabhupada said, when he first arranged the first marriages in ISKCON, he said the men can marry more than one wife. He said because there will be more female devotees and they will need to be married and protected. And then the devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, this is illegal in America. And Prabhupada said, okay, then we cannot do it. But actually that's the system. The Vedic system is sometimes the men have to marry more than one wife in order to make sure the women are protected properly. And then who is the most powerful man?
Krishna.
That is Krishna. So he came, he had 16,108 wives, and then they all had maidservants and like that, so many with it. Only he can maintain everyone and keep everyone happy.
Mm-hmm.
In Kali Yuga, how many wives can you have? Yeah, you can have one, you can't even keep her happy. That's the system. So, you know, it's in Kali Yuga, it's not practical. But previously, Krishna himself, he had so many wives, and then each wife had maidservants. He maintained everyone. That was the system.
Gauri, you said Kshatriya was allowed to marry many wives so that he can maintain them. So, getting married many times means it will be more maintenance rather than just getting married one. To get married twice or thrice to maintain woman. So why can't just marry once and maintain her?
Maintain.
Because there's other women.
Yeah.
There's too many women. There's more women than men. So we have to marry more women so they have someone to look after them.
Oh, okay.
Protection. Not to maintain.
Yeah, there must be a system. So that was the system.
Because there were less men.
There were less men, yeah. Now it's not so much like that. But. that was the system. So, any other points?
Oh, Krishna, I heard that Krishna was only Krishna, like when Nadamuni went and visited all the 16,108 palaces, he found that Krishna was extremely faithful to every wife and perfect following Dharma, and that Krishna was a monogamous, like, because in every house he was totally a different incarnation, totally a different person.
Different form,
then,
that's all.
But I don't think Krishna would have invented any of the mermaids. Krishna is very pure. Krishna is spiritual.
Krishna is pure?
Yeah, Krishna is spiritual.
Krishna is spiritual?
Yeah.
Wow. Krishna is spiritual. Okay. So tomorrow night we'll continue with this chapter. And then next Monday night we'll continue with this chapter as well. One or two more classes on this chapter, so. So at the farm we have a few cows which we're about to purchase. We're going to purchase one cow and one bull from up at Mawulumba. They cost about $2,000 each. So we're looking for some devotees to sponsor. So if you know any devotees in your bhakti vrikshi groups or anything like that, any devotees who would like to sponsor a new cow and a new bull, then please contact me because we need to purchase like that. So thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki, Rishi Prabhu ki. Yeah.